In the fabled land of Northern California, nestled in the Valley of Sacramento, two friends begin a journey to enlighten the world about their experience living life as a Xennial. But what is a Xennial, you may ask? If you wish to know, then follow them on their adventures.
Welcome to the Xennial Chronicles. This is James.
This is Mike.
And today, we are going to be talking about one of my favorite subjects.
And what would that be?
Star Wars movies.
Oh, dang.
This is actually from a request from somebody who has been listening to the podcast. Admittedly, he has relation to me. He is my older brother, one of them.
Okay.
And he requested first that we put the Star Wars movies in kind of a viewing order.
Oh.
Yeah, instead of just watching them in their standard, in the standard numbered order or even release date order, an actual viewing order that makes the story make more sense.
Okay, so you're talking like this isn't like chronological order of the films.
No.
This is in order for you to understand specific plot points and kind of enjoy each of the plot
enjoyment,
points that come in.
Enjoyment, I think, is the key to at least the order I will give.
Okay.
And how I think they should be watched.
Okay.
Yeah, it's to me that's the real key of not watching them in. Again, there's some people who will watch the original trilogy movies 4, 5, and 6
right
first, and then we'll go back and watch episodes 1, 2, and 3, the second trilogy,
okay,
the prequel trilogy,
okay,
and then they'll watch the newer 7 and 8,
okay,
and then they'll watch the outlier movies like Rogue One or Han Solo story,
okay.
I think that is an incorrect way to handle the situation. There are others who will go episodes 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, and then again watch the outlier movies.
Okay.
Or throw Rogue One in at the spot chronologically where it would fall between 3 and 4.
Right.
But again, I think that's the actual wrong way to view these movies.
Okay, so
I think there's an appropriate order in which they can be viewed to maximize your enjoyment.
Are you including just like the root Star Wars films? Or are you talking about the offshoot movies, the Star Wars stories?
I will include one of the offshoot movies in my list, and that would be Rogue One, because I do believe the things that happen in Rogue One are plot important points for the original for the saga series.
I personally think Rogue One is the prequel or the grade of prequels that we should have gotten that would have been told as the Star Wars films back in the 90s. Technologically,
yes.
I don't think we would have been capable of doing it at the time, but in many aspects. But I really like. I don't know. Maybe it just took Disney getting a hold of the reins in order to make something like that happen. But I'm telling you what, dude, that's the type of prequel we should have had.
I agree with the sentiment. It's more of the feel of that movie, the tone of that movie.
Yeah.
I think that's what because the initial audience for the Star Wars movies are Gen Xers and Xennials.
Yeah.
I think the tone of that film, Rogue One, is more of what was looked for as a war film. When you hear the Clone Wars, you want to see war. And to me, Rogue One is more a war film than it is really a Star Wars film.
Right.
It's something that could have been set in a World War II setting if you just made some minor tweaks to characters and setting. The pacing of it, the idea of breaking into a secret base and getting plans for another secret base.
Yeah.
These things are breaking into a not-so-secret base to get plans for a secret base or a secret weapon.
Right.
These are things that could have easily fit in any World War II movie.
Right.
This is a war film. Rogue One is a war film with Star Wars clothes on.
Yeah, basically.
That's the way that I see it. And that's what I think. I know I was looking for in the prequels. I was looking for we're talking about the Clone Wars. I want a war film. I want something gritty. And instead we got bright colors and pageantry and weird backstories and frickin' midichlorians.
Complete side point on this that I think would be really interesting. There was a few films that came out. Have you ever heard of the anti-cheese edits?
Yes. These are edits of the Star Wars prequels that have removed unnecessary story and plot elements that don't further the narrative necessary for the original trilogy to happen.
Yeah.
So they cut out things like the majority of Jar Jar Binks. a lot of the extra.
They don't just cut out a majority. They literally like remove him speaking any kind of like offshot racist Jamaican English or whatever. They make him not even speak a regular tongue. He speaks like the other aliens in the other films that don't, and all of the aliens do that. So the aliens that were like total like stigmatized Asians at the beginning of episode one, and Jar Jar himself and any of the other aliens are speaking other.
By the way, Nemoidians.
Oh, is that what they are?
They are Nemoidians.
Okay. You know exactly. Yeah. So the whole racist tropes that they pulled from those in order to make them which was all obviously a very, very terrible choice, aged horribly.
Yes.
By the way, but they took them back to the original trilogy style where those aliens didn't speak.
Okay, so they had different languages.
Yeah, they had different languages and different tongues. So they used these abstract kind of alien voices in them, and then threw captions on the bottom so that you could understand the story as it developed. So, it's fantastic. That choice alone makes these things far, far better.
So you don't have a Jewish caricature in Watto.
No.
As well. Fantastic. No. That's just the you are right in the sense that those caricatures that happen, especially in episode one is probably the worst of them.
Yeah.
The caricatures vocally that happen are damaging in many ways.
Oh yeah. Very, very much so. It really takes away from the films overall.
Oh yeah.
Really badly.
So, Anyway, there was two points to what my brother asked for. One was a viewing order, and two was kind of to discuss the films, which we've already started into in the sense of, you know, comparing the original trilogy to the prequel trilogy, to the more modern trilogy, and then the outlying stories.
Yeah.
And I think it's obviously you see a different level of action capability and special effect capability depending on which decade the movies were made in, just by the advances of technology.
Right.
But I think that even episode 7 and episode 8, the more recent ones, that would be Force Awakens and The Last Jedi, I think even those are giving us as the fans more of what we were hoping out of the prequels than what we ended up getting.
Yeah.
And I think a lot of that has to do with the idea of when you watch the original trilogy, the weakest film, even though it was the one that started the whole thing, the weakest film in that trilogy is the original movie, Star Wars, or as it became retitled, A New Hope. Because originally when it came out, it was only called Star Wars. It did not have the subtitle of A New Hope.
Yep.
That was added later when Lucas supposedly revealed, but in truth decided there was going to be more chapters involved and, more importantly, story that happened previous to.
I was going to say, in around the 90s, he was like, yeah, it was supposed to be a 9-episode series and all this kind of stuff. I'm pretty sure that he just planned that. He didn't plan it back when it started.
Not in the same way. I mean, you have to understand that there are many things that changed in the process of the original idea. Anakin Starkiller, for instance, was supposed to be an old general.
Cool.
So was Luke Starkiller. Of course, Starkiller was then eventually used in the Force Unleashed games as a name for one of Darth Vader's apprentices.
Well, I know he's not called Luke Starkiller, but
Luke is Luke. It becomes Luke Skywalker. Starkiller is he has a different name. I cannot remember it right now.
Yeah, but I remembered Starkiller was.
I don't remember for sure.
Yeah, I can't remember.
But he's called Starkiller.
He is called Starkiller. That's way before Disney got their hands on it.
Yeah, it was still a Lucas product. And then
they reappropriated a lot of that old stuff from the old blueprints. I think they took the original X-Wings from that and then made them the new version of the X-Wings as well. The original conceptual ones where they had the
split wings.
Yeah, the split wings.
Yeah, there's a difference in the way that the wings work that was part of the original concept, but they couldn't make it properly.
Right.
On the models back then, it didn't translate well. Now they were able to.
Well, at this point, it was like all CGI at this point.
So. Yeah, so you can get away with a lot more.
Yeah.
But I think what you see is some different storytellers getting their hands in that make the difference in the movies. Again, in the original trilogy, A New Hope was the weakest because I believe George Lucas, while great at coming up with ideas, great at creating universes, is really not adept at screenwriting and directing. It's just not his forte.
Yeah, his thing is being creative just in general.
Yeah, you take
he's a genius at that.
Well, you take a creative property like, what would it be like if you had a, you know, adventurer, like an Alan Quatermain style adventurer.
Right.
That was, you know, just trotting the globe and getting involved in all kinds of nifty stuff in the 30s and 40s. And he goes to his friend Steven and says, hey, Steven, you want to check this out? You want to do something with it? And what do we get?
We get Indiana Jones.
Yeah, we get Indiana Jones. Yep. And those movies are great, not because of Lucas's direction as much. I mean, Steven Spielberg directed those movies, and they are classic Spielberg movies.
Yeah.
And they kind of create this whole other world that, again, Lucas came up with the idea, and he's great with it, but he needs somebody that is good at making films to bring these things to life.
Right.
So you see with Empire, you get his film teacher from the college he went to. I think it was at UCLA. I'm not entirely positive which school Irving Kirshner taught at.
Yeah.
But Irving Kirshner had been a film director and then was teaching film. And this is a class that Francis Ford Coppola was in. This is a class George Lucas was in. Martin Scorsese.
Okay.
He is brought in by Lucas to direct the second installment of the Star Wars movies.
Okay.
He brings in Lawrence Kasdan to do the screenwriting for it. Now, okay. Lawrence Kasdan, I'm not even going to try to list the various things that Lawrence Kasdan has written.
Okay.
I'm going to tell anybody listening to this, go to IMDb, either if you're smart enough to have the app on your phone. If you're not, get the app on your phone. But IMDb, either on the app or on the actual website, look up Lawrence Kasdan and look at all the movies that he wrote and was a part of the writing team for.
I've seen that name more times than I can count.
He is an amazing screenwriter. He does very well with good dialogue elements. He's able to actually tell stories of relationships and people being able to connect with each other. He keeps a story flowing and moving. You have Irving Kirshner, who's able to visually make that story work. And you get a much smoother film. You get a better acted film. And
hold on one second. Yeah. I missed a detail here.
Yes.
And you may have said it, but Irving Kirshner directed Empire?
Yes, Irving Kirshner directed Empire.
So he got, let me get this straight,
yeah.
He got his teacher
yes.
to direct the second movie.
Yes.
Because he's just like, I've got this
well, it was,
huge
it
franchise was, and it's blowing up, but I need a better director for my second film.
Well, and the first one just about beat Lucas to the ground trying to get it done. Because the effects that existed in it, so much of it had to be done with models, and that part of the filmmaking was so far behind, it was just too much of a strain on Lucas. Now, this brings in something interesting. You talk about how it blew up and it became huge.
Yeah.
Star Wars, in fact, was one of two movies that created, it coined a term that is a term we're going to be talking about in another podcast that we'll end up doing.
Okay.
It's a term that has actual great meaning to both you and I.
Okay.
The movie Star Wars and another movie released around the same time, Jaws, by Steven Spielberg, again, in the same film school that Lucas was in.
Yeah.
They coined a very specific term. Any idea what that term would be?
Nope.
Blockbuster. The term blockbuster was created as a result of the lines and the attention given to both Jaws and Star Wars and how much they sold in tickets and how big the movies were, because people were lining up around the block to go in to see these films multiple times.
That's where the term comes from.
Yes, that's what the term comes from. Appropriate that it would be used for a video rental chain.
Of course, of course. I mean, that's a great term.
And it's a great story for the term and connectivity into that industry. But
I didn't know that they were kind of helping coin that term.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, the news writers at the time coined it as a result of the attention that those two movies specifically got.
Wow.
So yeah, this thing was building up and blowing up. Now, when you watch Star Wars movie, how does a Star Wars movie start?
A long time ago in a galaxy far, far away.
And then you get the bang.
Then
you see the opening crawl.
Yeah.
Where are the opening credits?
There aren't any opening credits.
Exactly.
It's just a story.
It's just, it's crawl. And then
here's the opening crawl. Here's the why am I missing the term?
Space pan.
No.
There's the opening crawl.
The opening crawl is just a prologue. It's just a prologue.
Just
that's
a
what
prologue.
It is.
Prologue goes into the distance, and then you get and this then, is key, you get a space pan.
Yep.
And space pan is important.
Downward.
In all but one of the saga trilogy or of the saga movies, and all but one of them, it pans downward, and one of them, it pans upward. Episode two.
Does it go upward?
Yes, it does. Huh. It's the only one that does.
I did not know that.
Most people don't. You have to be somebody that's...
Is that a Kirshner take?
No, well, episode two is George Lucas, because I'm talking episode... I'm not talking Empire. I'm talking episode two.
Oh, episode
Attack
two.
Of the
I'm
Clones.
Sorry. Oh,
yeah,
wow,
episode
yeah.
two.
See, this is where I get completely screwed up, because I still think episode two is the second Star Wars film that came
which
out.
Which is episode not, five.
Right.
But anyway, back to point.
Yeah.
There's no opening credits. Right. Now, when the first Star Wars was made, when A New Hope was made, the Directors Guild and the Directors Guild of America and the Actors Guild of America really weren't concerned about opening credits at the beginning of the movie, because it was a B movie. It was a Flash Gordon retelling. Nobody thought it would be anything.
Well, it's space hi-fi, whatever.
Yeah.
It's never been a marketable
Well,
franchise.
It exploded. It became huge. So when the second one was going to come out, the Directors Guild and the Actors Guild were pressing very heavily for there to be opening credits, because they want opening credits in the movies to identify who directed it, who stars in it. This is part of their contractual stuff that they want to have happen. I don't know the reasons why, but this is the things they wanted to have happen in films. They
so
didn't want
wait a
just
minute.
To open
this,
into the story.
This crap that was going down with him was due to opening credits?
Opening credits. So he was able to for Empire, get a Directors Guild director, Irving Kirshner.
Right.
And he was able to deal with the Actors Guild stuff by paying. He paid all of the fines that the Directors Guild and the Actors Guild levied against him for not having opening credits, because he didn't want to have them. He wanted you
That's
to jump
a political
into the movie.
Thing. A fine? Yeah,
it is.
Come on.
It is a political thing. By the time Return of the Jedi came around.
Right. Oh, he had been blackballed, basically.
Basically, the Directors Guild told any of their directors, if any of you sign on to do this movie and he doesn't do the opening credits like he plans not to, you're going to be booted out of the guild, which means that any film that is guild associated, you're not going to get.
So at that point, he probably hit up Kirshner again. Hey, do you want to do another one?
Oh,
he's
no.
like, oh,
no,
dude, I can't
no,
do that.
No, no. He didn't
he
hit
didn't
up
even
Kirshner.
Hit him up?
No, he hit up somebody else.
Who did he hit up? Spielberg?
Yes.
Of course he would.
Imagine Steven Spielberg directing Return of the Jedi.
Okay, that would have been sick.
That would have been amazing.
And
except
Jedi,
of course,
like,
except of course, like instead of sorry for the spoiler for anybody who doesn't know Star Wars, instead of Darth Vader dying, he just would have left his son, because apparently in every Spielberg movie, some father has to leave some son at some point or another. It's just kind of the way things go. But anyway.
Seems like it.
That's he's got daddy abandonment issues in all of his movies. But anyway.
Wow,
he was unable to get Steven Spielberg because Spielberg was a Directors Guild director. So instead, he snagged a British director by the name of Richard Marquand.
Okay.
That name sound familiar at all?
Not necessarily, no.
That's because he really hasn't done anything else of any note.
Oh, okay.
Now,
what's funny is, and I don't know if I said this during the podcast or not, but my personal favorite was Jedi, because I liked, maybe it was just the closing of the story. It's
yeah,
everything is like
that.
It's the tension is the highest. It's Luke and Vader. They legitimately meet. They fought an empire, but Luke was not a Jedi yet. He was nowhere near it.
No, no. Not
and
even close.
He was just yeah, he was it was the it was a completely different kind of a setup. And personally, I thought that final climax, like the whole franchise at this point has been waiting for this specific scene
yeah.
to happen.
Oh yeah.
And I don't know. That's why I like Jedi so much. It's really like, I don't study much of the rest of the film or remember too much of the rest of the film. It's been decades since I've seen it.
I will say the other real high point, it comes at the end when you're dealing with you have the intercutting between, and this is one of the things the Star Wars films did beautifully, is the intercutting between three different action things happening at once. And they're all happening simultaneously, but you cut appropriately between them. So you have the battle above Endor with the second Death Star.
Right.
You have the battle on Endor to try to destroy the shield bunker. To knock the shield out over the second Death Star. And then you have the battle on the Death Star itself, Vader and Luke for basically both of their souls. If you really
yeah,
want to think about it. And all of those battles, when you watch that space battle, for instance, there is the technology leaped so much from 1977 when the original one came out
yeah.
to 1983, which Don't you find that interesting that the original Star Wars trilogy falls right in the category of years for the Xennial generation, 77 to 83? Just saying.
That is kind of funny.
We are the Star Wars generation. But anyway, when you see that final battle and you compare it to the final battle at the end of the original Star Wars, A New Hope,
okay,
the number of just vehicles in the final battle over Endor is astounding. So many TIE fighters. For the Rebel Alliance, you have A-Wings, you have X-Wings, you have Y-Wings, and you have B-Wings in that battle. And yes, as cheesy as the names are, it's just a letter and a wing. Those are different ships, completely different ships with, if you're geeky like me and know, completely different capabilities and attack purposes.
Yeah.
You have multiple Star Destroyers. You have a Star Destroyer that was the first original appearance of a Super Star Destroyer. They edited one later into Executor, which is Vader's Star Destroyer, Vader's Super Star Destroyer.
Right.
When they did the special editions for Empire, they edited it back into Empire.
Oh, really?
But the original first appearance of Executor was in Return of the Jedi, and that's the one that Admiral Piett is on. It gets an A-Wing crashing into its bridge, and then It's the one that crashes into the second Death Star. You see that big, the big Star Destroyer crashing into the second Death Star, flames everywhere? That's Executor. That's Vader's personal ship. Originally only appeared in Return of the Jedi, and then, like I said, were put back in with the special edition stuff later to Empire.
Wow.
But so many things in that battle. So you have the tension of the saber fight you're talking about.
Uh-huh.
And then you have this awesome space battle. And then you have furry little bears fighting off stormtroopers.
Yeah. You know, I kind of like that setting too, because even though it was called Star Wars, a big major part of the film was an on-planet battle.
Well,
I do kind of like those battle scenes. Actually, those are some of my favorite parts of any of the Star Wars films. Any large-scale battles that take place, that's a person-to-person, hand-to-hand type combat.
So you get more of the personal effect.
Yeah, I like that.
I get that.
Coming from a guy who's into kung fu movies, that just makes sense. You know what I mean?
I get that. So Darth Maul was probably the only bright spot of episode one for you.
Yeah, for the most part, yeah.
Ray Park is amazing. Sadly, he was at first given some pretty crappy roles in movies. I mean, heck, one role he's headless. So quite literally, you know that, right?
Yeah.
That he's the headless horseman in the Tim Burton Sleepy Hollow movie.
That's Ray Park?
That's Ray Park as
the
headless horseman.
I didn't know that.
Yep, that is Ray Park as the headless horseman.
Cool.
Yeah, kind of cool. Fun.
But yeah, I mean, I kind of like those types of battles when I see, you
understandable.
Know, the, I guess, war scene type, you know.
It's completely understandable.
It's a very D-Day looking kind of thing, I guess.
Well,
is the best way of saying it.
I get that. Actually, that leads into another point for later.
Okay.
But that's...
Speaking of which, I don't think we've said... You said that what we were trying to get to was the film order. We haven't even touched on that this whole time. We've been talking for like 20 minutes.
We will get to the film order. The film order will be the second half.
That makes a lot of sense. We're just kind of getting into the little details and stuff. I like that.
This is just discussing the movies.
And
we've just gone through the original trilogy at this point, talking about the differences between them. You then, and we were touching on Return of the Jedi, how that's your favorite.
Yes.
And you found it interesting to know that Richard Marquand, kind of an unknown, directed that.
Yeah,
as a result of the fact that he was an unknown, what ended up actually happening during the production is George Lucas had a much bigger hand in it than most people realized.
Okay.
Which is why for some people, there are some pacing issues in it, and why it does have a little bit more of a friendly tone. Empire is a fairly dark movie.
Right.
And I don't think Lucas had it in him to be that dark.
Oh.
When he tried to be that dark, it became more humorous than really dark, in my opinion.
Okay.
So years pass, obviously. All of us from that generation that were fans kept waiting for more. We got all the book stuff, which is now considered non-canon.
Yeah.
All the extended universe. Finally, we get our prequels, and all three of the prequels written and directed by George Lucas, and all three pretty well panned for being terrible films.
Oh, the prequel trilogy.
Yeah, one, two, and three.
Yeah.
They're pretty well panned for just being not very good. The love story, this epic love story that we thought we would hear about between Anakin and whoever was Luke and Leia's mom. Again, spoilers, Anakin Skywalker, who becomes Darth Vader, that's the parent of Luke and Leia. Just saying.
How dare you?
Sorry. Sorry, if you don't know that now. Although, funny enough, my film order...
Who's Rosebud, James? Who's Rosebud?
You really want to know?
Of course I know who it is.
Do you?
Yeah.
Have you seen Citizen Kane?
Yes, I have seen
Citizen Kane. Yes, that is a Citizen Kane reference, everybody. If you've not seen it, go watch it.
I'll be here all week.
Anyway, the new trilogy, the prequel trilogy just... And I shouldn't say new anymore because we have the new trilogy that's coming out now. The prequel trilogy just gave us bright, shiny... Tons of color and no real grit and story that we were expecting from it.
It was just disgustingly polished. And all when of
they
it. Try,
and when they tried to get gritty with you know the youngling scene in episode 3,
even that was too.
That's still too funny. Yeah, it's still not enough for anything. However, if you want to get the full understanding of Star Wars, they are necessary watching. You should watch them at least once. You don't have to watch them any more than once,
right?
But you should watch them at least once. Now, of course, we've been lucky enough in the last few years to receive episodes that happen after Return of the Jedi instead of before.
Right.
We've gotten episode 7, J.J. Abrams' basically love letter to the original trilogy.
Totally.
Because if you watch that and don't realize that he is trying to play up every single wonderful thing that people remembered from episodes 4, 5, and 6, then you really don't know what's going on. Because that's exactly what he's doing. He's making all of us have that nostalgia moment.
Right, totally.
And then you have episode 8, which literally went and turned everything on its head.
There's, you know, honestly, I like it because of that. I know a lot of people that don't.
I can say when I saw it the first night in the theater, because I went opening night to go see it, first showing in the area to go see it, because I didn't want have any possibility of not knowing the story,
yeah.
You know, whatever spoilers, any of that. It's the only thing I worry about spoilers with is the Star Wars movies. I don't care about like Avengers Endgame is coming up. If I don't get to see it the day that it opens, as soon as stuff gets put on the internet, I'm going to read it because I'm not worried about spoilers going into it. The Star Wars stuff, I watch it the first day because I don't want somebody spoiling that crap.
Let's be real, James. You just want to know what Ant-Man does. You just want to know what Ant-Man does.
You know...
That is the best running joke right now.
So memed out.
It is, and it's great.
It is.
Did you see the Did you see the Endgame poster that they did?
Yes, and
with the Avengers A for anus.
Yes, yes. And I've seen all the different ones from where they bring in, you know, the Avenge the Fallen, and they bring in people from a bunch of different. Like I saw one with Wash from Firefly, and I saw one. I've seen one with like. Basically every major character that has died in Game of Thrones. So there's like 250 pictures or something like that.
That's funny. I think one of my favorite ones is it's still, you know, referencing. And what's funny is I know everything about what happened in the Avengers film so far.
Yeah.
Just because people can't stop flipping talking about
exactly.
it.
Exactly.
I still like, I have never seen, I haven't seen Ultron. I just watched Ragnarok. No, sorry. I just started watching Ragnarok. I haven't finished it yet. I saw Doctor Strange like three weeks ago.
There's a small part of me that wants to punch you.
No, I get it. I understand.
Ragnarok is amazing.
Still haven't seen it.
Where'd you get up to?
I got up to the scene.
We can edit this out later. So where'd you get up to?
Oh. Hit that lap real quick. I saw the opening and I got up to where he's in New York and Loki gets swallowed up. And then, I've seen it to Doctor Strange and I saw it up to the end of the scene of Doctor Strange and I'd seen so much of it. I was like, because I hadn't seen Doctor Strange at that point.
You don't need to see Doctor Strange because he's gone from the movie.
I felt like I wanted to see it.
But he's gone from the movie at that point. You don't see him again.
Damn it. Because I watched that whole scene.
He's gone from the movie at that point.
Now, damn it. I got to know what's going on. Maybe he gets involved. So I go and watch Doctor Strange.
You don't even need to see the Doctor Strange movie to understand his appearance in Infinity War. You don't need to see his movie.
Doctor Strange was really good.
He's not in his movie. He's in his movie.
I don't mean him. I mean the movie. I thought the movie was great. Aside from the fact that
I mean,
just about threw up on my couch watching the freaking fight scenes.
Why? because all
the whole the reality bend, like there's no ground to the whole thing.
I will say this much.
Zero of any of the characters are centered in gravity. It was like the Matrix on acid.
The one thing that was awesome about that movie, you have Tilda Swinton. Admittedly, she's playing what's supposed to be an Asian character, but Tilda Swinton playing the ancient one. So that's like high caliber actor already.
Right.
Then you got freaking Chiwetel Ejiofor.
Who?
Chiwetel Ejiofor playing Baron Modo.
Yep.
Who, again, high caliber of acting.
I actually ended up looking up the Wikipedia on him. Yeah. And that was a great character change.
Chiwetel Ejiofor?
Yeah.
Yeah.
That was a great character change. The moral conflict and all that. Yeah.
We discussed that. And then Mads Mikkelsen, who is probably one of the best Swedish actors alive right now.
Oh, he's fantastic.
Other than all the Skarsgårds, Mads Mikkelsen is amazing.
Yeah.
And him playing, I forget what the name of his character is in that movie, but he is just so, I love the fact that he's just who he is. He's amazing.
Oh, he's stoic. He reminds me of, he's like, he knows what his moral grounds, his moral grounds sits.
He's not really a villain.
He is completely, no.
But he is. He is, but he's not. He's definitely one of those villains that believes that what he wants to do is the correct and appropriate thing to make the world a better place.
Yeah, no, that's what it is. He feels like he has the moral high ground in the film, and he is extremely confident in all of it.
And his acting, because I mean, you know what else he's in right now, or he was in, right? He was in the Hannibal TV series. He was playing Hannibal Lecter.
He was so good.
He is. He's just got that presence.
Wait,
about
is Hannibal
him.
Still going, or has the?
It
series
may have
ended?
Stopped. It may have stopped. I think it did. Okay, but still, so it doesn't matter. He was in it.
I have seen it up to. I've seen like halfway through the first season.
Yeah, he's just amazing.
Oh man. That whole series is really good.
He's just got the creepiness factor, but at the same time, you could see why you would trust him.
Totally.
And that's one of the actors that my wife kind of has a tiny bit of crush on.
Mads Mikkelsen?
Yeah, she thinks he's amazing.
I could understand that.
But no, that was kind of the cool thing about it. And then you throw in Bandicoot Smatcherback, whatever his name is. He's amazing. But no, it's got good points to the movie. But at the same time, it's completely unnecessary to understand Doctor Strange's role. And Ragnarok, dude, that movie is so funny.
I've seen it up to, I've seen it up to the opening where Loki is impersonating Odin and all that, watching the play.
So you saw who was in the play, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Sam Neill playing.
Sam Neill and Matt Damon?
And I believe it's Chris Hemsworth.
It is?
I think it's either Chris Hemsworth or it's.
Are you sure it's not Liam?
Sorry, no, it's Liam. You're right. It's Liam.
Liam Hemsworth.
Because Chris is
Thor. Who's he playing?
I think Liam is playing the Thor in there.
Is it Liam Hemsworth playing Thor?
It's either Liam Hemsworth or...
I don't think it was Liam Hemsworth that was playing Thor.
No, it's either that or it's Chris Pine.
Because I know it's Matt Damon that was playing Loki.
Yeah. No, it's Luke. It's Luke. It's their other brother, Luke.
Luke Hemsworth?
Who plays the Thor.
I was like, why does he look familiar but not?
Yeah. But the Matt Damon thing, it's hilarious because you see Matt Damon, you're like, what the fuck? Why is Matt Damon in this movie?
Yeah.
What the hell is happening here? It's beautiful.
Yeah, that's God, that I know was
it gets,
a good scene.
It gets so much better. Surtur, by the way, the guy he fights at the beginning.
Yeah.
Which that fight is even hilarious.
Yes.
It's about time they freaking use probably the only Led Zeppelin song that I really like.
Favorite song, yeah.
It's about time they use it in an appropriate way. And it comes back later in the movie. Oh, it comes back Fantastic. Big later in the movie.
Okay.
But
what's funny about Led Zeppelin is one of the big things they were big about, not having their music used in advertisements or film forever. The first time it was actually used in film was in the movie School of Rock. They were playing Immigrant Song on the bus
It's also in Shrek the Third.
Right, but School of Rock came out first.
You're right.
School of Rock, actually what they did was they sent the scene at the competition in the theater. The entire theater sang Immigrant Song with Jack Black to pander to like Jimmy Page and be like, please let us use this song in this film. It's just for this short period of time and we love you and we love all this. Like, it's perfect for the scene. It needs to happen. And we know you don't let this happen normally, but please let us do this. And it won them over. It totally won them over. But I thought that was just kind of cool.
No, it comes
since
back.
Since then, they've opened that up a little bit.
Yeah, it comes back in Ragnarok a couple of different times. But dude, the guy who directed Ragnarok.
Yes.
He's a New Zealand director.
Yeah.
Kiwi director. This dude, and he's half Maori. This dude is like funny as hell. What he specializes in is doing like
the awkwardness of it is a very Flight of the Conchords type of.
That's the guy. Vibe. He does Flight of the Conchords. Yes, he's involved with Jermaine Clement and stuff all
that's
the time.
Fantastic.
There's a movie that they did called "What We Do in the Shadows" or "What We Do in What We Do in the Shadows." It's a mockumentary of a vampire family in New Zealand, and him and Jermaine Clement wrote it together. They were the only people that saw the actual script, and everybody else just had to kind of play along with it. But they have like
so
vampire.
They're trolling their entire cast and the crew.
In a sense, this guy does most of what he does. It's I can't think. I'm a freaking actor, and I can't think of the damn word. I can't think of it.
Improv?
There you go. I could not think of the freaking word improv.
It's okay.
Anyway.
Well, let's go back to...
let's go back to the original point here.
Yeah.
Okay. Back to the Star Wars point. I went on the opening day to see episode 8. The most recent one, The Last Jedi.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
And I can say on opening day, I walked away from The Last Jedi very upset. Because of the fact that it was a turn on its head type of thing. It was so different. I was like the majority of people were like, what the hell did this guy do? He did not make a Star Wars movie. He missed out on the most important thing. In my mind, one of the most important things that are necessary for it to be a Star Wars saga movie, the last shot of the movie should have a Skywalker in it. Every one of the movies, a Skywalker is in the last shot of the movie. Challenge me.
No, I'm going through the last shot of each of the films in my head, and you're absolutely correct.
I am.
Every one of them, including the prequel trilogy.
Technically speaking, you can say that Luke is in every shot if you want to consider the fact that he would have been an egg inside of Padme. Spoiler. But there's a Skywalker in every single shot. At the end of the movie, at least one Skywalker. There is not in
episode 8. Leia isn't even in the final shot.
Not of episode 8. No, it's not. It's a kid that... doesn't seem to have any Skywalker relation.
Right, but he is Force...
He may be Force sensitive, but he doesn't have any Skywalker relation. Sorry again, spoilers.
All right. Here's where I kind of internally, I mentally justify that.
Well, I can actually tell you what the director's justification is for that.
Well, the director's justification, I can tell you that without freaking hearing it. It's just the fact, it's like, stop trying to hang on the old tropes of the films.
Yes.
Just move forward.
And that's what it is. It's the idea that the story can be passed on.
So he just destroyed what was going on. Now, the only real gripe that I have about episode 8.
Okay.
Is the fact that they took Snoke, who could have potentially been...
Spoilers!
Fantastic. Absolutely fantastic. How long has this movie been out?
Okay, I'm just saying. Go on.
I was going to say, how long has this movie been out?
Not really
a big deal. They just obliterate him. It's a cool way of doing it.
Oh, God, yes, it is.
It's a cool way of doing it.
Oh, God,
but
yes.
But you are so, like, the whole time, he was the one. He was the character I was the most interested in. Who is
really?
Snoke? Yes.
Okay.
I think
that's part of the reason why he was killed off the way he was.
Yeah.
Because so many people were just going over and over, who is Snoke?
Who is this guy? Is he Samuel L. Jackson turned into a Sith? Is he this?
I think the point that the director made was, he's nobody important. That's the whole point. It doesn't have to be,
It's between, exactly.
There doesn't have to be some big grand scheme behind it all. He was just some dude.
Yeah,
and now he's no more a dude.
That was one major thing I didn't like.
Well, but again,
that's the only major thing I didn't like. Everything else made
that's still the
sense
whole turning it on its head and making it different.
Okay.
Oh,
I have realized something. I said everything else made sense to me. That weird side plot,
the Canto Bight.
Yeah.
The money planet, the Las Vegas planet.
Yeah, the Vegas planet was really awkward. I mean, they free the horse racing creatures and all that kind of stuff. But that literally had nothing to do with the main plot. The only thing that had to do with it was the slave kid that was force sensitive at the end of the film.
Yes, it did. It was connected to that kid. And then
literally all it was.
Well,
I disagree with you.
I think it was character development for Finn.
You think so?
Yes, because Finn, up until that point, Finn's motivation throughout the movie was to try to get Rey safe. Find Rey, get Rey safe. He's about to try to get into an escape pod when Rose finds him.
Right.
He's trying to get to Rey to get Rey safe.
So
that's all his motivation.
So the idea is teaching Finn that there's more to do than just
that. Actually, is what makes Finn a part of the Resistance, as opposed to just being somebody who's running away from the First Order. He's running away from the First Order in the first one. He stays to help Rey and destroys the Starkiller base, which is where Starkiller comes up again.
Right.
He destroys Starkiller base to help Rey and help, you know, that's his main motivation in the first film.
Right.
He gets, you know, partially sliced up with a lightsaber at the end of the first film. So he's, you know, in medical stuff.
Right.
When he wakes up in this film, Rey's gone. He's trying to get to Rey. He's trying to keep Rey safe. That's his only motivation. By the end, he is fighting for the Resistance. And that's where that story is necessary for him to see what the reason is to fight for the Resistance.
Okay.
Rose is his inspiration. And Rose, of course, almost sacrifices herself to try to save him.
Yeah.
And that's where he has his real moment of, there's more than just my personal petty things.
Yes.
There's a bigger thing I can be a part of.
Oh, see, that's cool. I can understand that.
And you need that time of them taking that trip for him and Rose to develop that relationship of her wanting to save him, her caring about him, and him caring about her. That's necessary.
Right.
So it does make some sense.
Okay.
But like I said, first night I came away from that movie hating it. After I thought about it and realized, the idea of turning everything on its head, it's a really good film. Is it a really good Star Wars film? It's an okay Star Wars film, but as a film in general, good film.
I really enjoyed it. And I think that it fits because it's coming down to the wire when it's not about, well, to me, the new Star Wars films should not be about fan service.
Well, no,
Abrams had a lot of fun with it.
Actually, what's nice about it is because Abrams is directing number 9.
Yes.
He was brought back in to direct number 9.
Yes.
If they do this the right way, they did number 7 as the fan service.
Right.
Number 8, twist everything on its head to make everything new.
Yeah.
Number 9 should be a complete payoff for why they did the twist on its head.
Oh,
make
yeah.
It, make the story still be, make it original, make it not pander, but at the same time, give the perfect capping to everything that's happened in the universe.
100%.
And then, of course, we have the offshoot movies like Rogue One, A Star Wars Story, and Han Solo, A Star Wars Story.
Right.
Rogue One takes place literally days before Episode 4, the events of Episode 4.
Right.
And Han Solo Story takes place sometime when Han Solo is still a young man. I will say this, Rogue One, and when we go into the listing of things, of the films, in the order they should be viewed in, Rogue One is essential.
Yes, I agree.
Han Solo is not essential. You can watch it if you want to. It's a fun little escape, but it does not bring enough plot points that are necessary for the original trilogy, whereas Rogue One definitely fleshes out that part of the universe better.
Okay.
So we've had some discussion about the different movies. We're going to take a break now. And when we come back from the break, we are actually going to discuss the order they should be watched in and why.
Yes.
Okay. We'll be back.
I'm excited.
Hey, everyone. This is James from the Zenio Chronicles. If you're watching this on YouTube, please hit the subscribe button at the bottom of this video. And be sure to click on the bell icon so you can be notified when we release new videos. And if you aren't watching on YouTube, please go to our page and do all that stuff anyway. Thanks for listening, and now back to the show. And we are back. I apologize for the length of the first, not really half, two-thirds of this episode, because we're talking about Star Wars, and I always say too much about Star Wars.
You should apologize to me for the amount of editing I need to make on that to make it fit in time.
Just so you know, there will be parts that will be edited out and used later where we actually talk about completely different movie series. Right now, though, we're going to get down to the real thing my brother asked me for, which was a viewing order for the movies.
Yeah, I got to know what this is. I have a possible viewing order personally that I think, and maybe it's the same. I'm not going to give it to you, though, because I want you to tell me first.
I will. Since between
this
the two of us.
This is kind of centric to your recommendation.
Well,
here.
And between the two of us, I would say I am the Star Wars expert.
Yeah, exactly.
So that's why I guess it's fallen on me to make the list. So here is what I consider the appropriate list to watch the movies, to get the story the right way. Especially if you're introducing somebody new to the movies who's never seen them, who just has a rough idea that there's, you know, a Darth Vader and lightsabers and, you know, some guy that speaks with a horrible Jamaican accent. Here's the way to go
Yoda?
About it. No, Yoda's... Yoda's...
I broke him. I've succeeded.
Actually, what's interesting about the way Yoda talks is it's very similar to a lot of indigenous groups' way of talking in the sense of... where they put in the sentence, the noun, the verb, the actions, the way we create our sentences, the way we say an appropriate sentence, we have a method we're supposed to do it. I'm not sadly knowledgeable in my English stuff right now, but there's...
We break that rule constantly. That's why you don't know what the rule is anymore.
But there are certain native populations that they say the things in what we would consider a reverse order of how you should say them.
Yeah.
But it's the way that they conceptualize the world, so they say it in that order. But anyway, diverging from the topic.
Told you I broke him.
Yes, almost. what would make sense for an alien of an undetermined species that only one other you ever see in the entire series. But
okay, let's.
But anyway,
let's rein it back.
So your movie things.
Yeah,
the first one you should watch is the original Star Wars Episode 4, also known as A New Hope.
New Hope. Okay,
it starts the story off. It gives you a basis for where you should begin and introduces you appropriately into the universe of Star Wars, into this long time ago galaxy far, far away.
Right.
Follow it up with Empire.
Okay.
So Episode 4, 5. Okay. Now, there is a story reveal at the end of Empire. I'm not, for anybody who's seen it, which should be the majority of people listening have seen it.
40-year-old spoiler alert.
40-year-old spoiler alert. Darth Vader is Luke Skywalker's father.
What? How dare you?
I know.
You're a terrible human being.
It can't be. It's impossible. No, no. Are we done? Good.
Yep.
After you get the spoiler, and again, for the people who have not watched it for some reason, been living under a rock, or they're too young to have watched it, or too old to have watched it, that point, when you get that information that Darth Vader is Anakin Skywalker, Luke's father, go back and start watching Episode 1.
Okay.
Then Episode 2.
Okay.
Then Episode 3, which is the backstory of Anakin from his child and how basically he becomes Darth Vader.
Okay.
What leads to it? Follow Episode 3 with Rogue One. Rogue One being a offshoot story that's away from the main saga, but tells the story of what happens literally in the days before Episode 4, the first one you're watching, the original Star Wars.
Okay.
Part of the reason for this is there's only a few scenes with Darth Vader in it, this helps to establish where Anakin at the end of episode three, he becomes Darth Vader. He's finally in the Darth Vader suit.
Right.
Terrible scene, but still he's in the suit finally.
No.
Exactly. Now, getting to watch Rogue One at that point, you see the events leading up to where your story started, and you see why everybody was so afraid of Darth Vader.
Right.
There is a moment at the end of Rogue One where Darth Vader is basically on a tear, and it is amazing. It's
a minute
and 45 seconds of sheer amazing.
Yeah.
And watching it then, you see where Anakin became Darth Vader and what the results are.
Yeah.
And why everybody's been so afraid of him and what he's done. That completes that. That gives you the complete backstory of Darth Vader after he's revealed to Luke, "I'm your dad."
Right.
So, after watching episodes 1, 2, and 3, and then Rogue One, you then jump into Return of the Jedi.
Okay.
And continue on from Return of the Jedi
seven,
to
eight.
Force Awakens, and to which it would be 7, and to The Last Jedi, which would be 8. That, to me, is the most appropriate way to view it, because if you view episodes 1, 2, 3, and Rogue One, even though chronologically in the universe they come first.
Yeah.
You lose the power of that reveal, and you can use those movies instead as basically the world's longest flashback sequence.
Basically, yeah, there's just so much setup.
And it's not necessary beforehand. It's better to kind of jump into the universe with episode 4, with the original Star Wars.
Yeah, I agree.
Jump in, and then after 5, after you get that reveal, after Empire's over and you get the reveal of, "Hey, I'm your dad," go back and see what the dad's life is. Because you can think of it this way. Think of it. There's even a moment at the end of episode 5, at the end of Empire.
Yeah.
Where Luke and Vader are kind of communicating telepathically. Luke is on the Millennium Falcon trying to fly away from Cloud City. Vader is on, in almost any edition you're going to watch, because they're special edition versions now, he's on Executor, his Super Star Destroyer. And they're mentally communicating back and forth about, "Hey, you know, you can join me, son. And no, I'm not going to join you because you're evil, dad." That kind of stuff.
Right.
The way I envision it is, the Millennium Falcon is able to jump into hyperspace, even though it's not supposed to be able to because there's something wrong with the ship's computer.
Right.
They're able to jump into hyperspace, and Vader's just kind of left standing there on his command deck.
Right.
In fact, his admiral, who he had just promoted at the beginning of the movie, beginning of Empire Strikes Back,
yeah,
Admiral Piette,
yeah,
is waiting for some kind of angry flash out from Vader for the Millennium Falcon escaping, and Vader just walks off the command deck, walks off the bridge.
Right.
My thought is, the way I kind of envision it, is Vader walks off the bridge, goes to his little hyperbaric chamber that he sits in, and he goes over all of the events of his life that got him connected to the Jedi and brought him to be Darth Vader.
Right.
And so what you're watching when you watch episodes 1, 2, and 3 and Rogue One after Empire,
right,
you're watching basically him going through his memories and remembering all the stuff. And that even makes the kind of bright and flashy and weird look and feel of the prequels make even more sense to me.
Uh-huh.
In that it's his remembrance of the time when he was still happy, his remembrance of the time when he was still innocent,
right,
before he had become what he is today. And if I view it like that, it actually makes it easier for me to forgive what I feel are the inadequacies in the original or in the prequel trilogy.
Yeah.
Makes it feel more like this is a kid remembering it. This is a kid into a teenager. He's remembering these things that happened to him. So it's a little more sparkly. A little
colorful. Kind of like your memory of something is always slightly more fond of.
Especially
your memory of something is more delightful than possibly the experience itself was.
Especially considering that after that he had a lot of darkness. And then you get to Rogue One when he is Darth Vader.
Yeah.
And it's a much darker movie.
It is. It's extremely dark.
I told you this earlier today, but I'm proclaiming it now on here. At this moment, Rogue One is my favorite Star Wars movie.
Yeah.
Just because of the fact that it is, you said earlier in the cast here, hopefully it isn't cut out as part of it, that it's the movie that we wanted the prequels to be.
Yeah.
It's got the energy, the feeling, the intensity. It's the war film we were expecting. And it is.
It was what we were looking to. That's what's so funny is they call it Rogue One, a Star Wars story.
Yeah, because it's separate from the saga. There's
a war in that film. And right in the middle of it. That sounds like a Star Wars film to me. It sounds like a major episode. Like, that's personally like
funny what side, I think. Funny side note for me, Mads Mikkelsen is in Rogue One.
You're right.
Yeah.
That's great.
Yes, it is a funny note.
Okay, so check this out. This is kind of like, would I be able to share my order?
Please, we have time. Extremely
well in line with you.
We have time, okay. So please share it.
So check this out.
Hold on real quick.
Yes.
The Han Solo story movie, I don't think is necessary viewing. If you want to watch it and enjoy it, that's fine. But I don't think it's necessary viewing to really get the entire story. There's only really one part of it that's interesting. Sorry, two parts. One, what happens to the robot that is Lando's robot,
right,
in the movie.
Right.
It actually explains a almost throwaway line in Empire Strikes Back.
Don't tell me because I can't. I don't need it. Yeah, don't spoil it because I haven't seen it yet.
That's all I'm saying. And then I will say Donald Glover's portrayal of Lando is fantastic. It is probably the best thing about that movie is his version of Lando is great.
Nice.
Very, very good. But
nice.
But otherwise, that little throwaway thing at the end of Empire that has to do with what happens to the robot, it's a bit of a stretch that they're connected, and again, not necessary to really enjoy the whole of the story. I mean, watch it for fun, but it's not some Rogue One is necessary. That isn't. So
I getcha.
So now this is Mike's list of how to watch them.
So essentially the order is pretty much the same when it comes down to the straight ahead Star Wars films. It's the same order.
Okay.
4, 5, 1, 2, 3, 6, 7, 8.
Okay, but right? you're not throwing Rogue One in there.
I'm not throwing Rogue One in there yet. Actually, I'm throwing it in a different place.
Okay, where's your place?
Right after Episode 4.
Really?
Episode 4, then Rogue One, then Episode 5, because then the major plot points that show up are obviously the establishment of the universe, then Rogue One, because your memory is still fresh.
So you're doing the flashback early.
Yes, I'm doing the flashback early, and the reason why is because it's a shorter time frame flashback, so what it is in episode 4, you have the line, a lot of people died to bring us this information. And on top of that, you also have an establishment of Darth Vader is one of the most feared generals in the galaxy, right? And
dude, you can actually keep explaining for
the
people.
Yeah, let me explain this. Yeah, because, okay, so here's the deal. Episode 4 establishes that Darth Vader is extremely powerful, except they don't explain really how. They have a couple of little clues. Then they have the obvious line about a lot of people died in order to get this. So episode 4, if you watch Rogue One directly after it, you get the story of the episode. Then you get two major plot points. One, how crazy badass Darth Vader is, and what happened to everybody that brought the Death Star plans that blew up the Death Star in the first film, right? Then, after you realize how powerful Vader is and what they did, then he gets direct relation to Luke Skywalker, and it kind of like doubles down on the mysticism of it. Personally,
dude,
I think what
I'm telling you right now. Telling you right now.
What?
I am officially putting your list as the right list.
What?
That is the most amazing argument. You just see, No.
Wow.
I have wanted
as the Star Wars veteran.
Have wanted to put Rogue One first, but because of how amazing the movie is, I'm too worried that going into the special effects and the capabilities of the 1977 New Hope would be almost a letdown after seeing Rogue One.
Right.
But you, your
I wish
description
we had
and your
like,
reasoning
your
is
your face
just,
is just blown out.
I'm in awe. I am in awe at this point because I thought I had the perfect list. I really did think I had the perfect list.
Threw it all on its head.
No, your reasoning of where to put that and have the flashback be there. Empire is a strong enough movie to come after. And more importantly, there's a gap in time between the end of New Hope and the beginning of Empire. There's like a 2-year gap in the, not just in the way it was filmed and released, but like in the Star Wars universe, there's almost a 2-year gap. A bunch of stuff has happened. They even allude to bounty hunters hunting down Han Solo between the two movies.
Yeah.
They're on a different base where they've been hiding out. It even says in the opening crawl that it's been a little bit of time.
Right.
And they've been, the Rebel Alliance has been on the run.
Right.
To throw that in. And then in the beginning of Empire, Vader has probably his most badass scene in the original trilogy.
Yeah.
The whole Admiral Piet scene.
Yeah.
Which is just, that to me was what made him the biggest badass. But you're so right. To use it at that moment when the reminder should be right there, the Death Star was destroyed. Throw in Rogue One there, which is the getting of the plans, the setting up of destroying it. Like you say, to see what was sacrificed for it, and you see all the sacrifices that Mon Mothma, that's the redhead, Mon Mothma.
Yes.
See all the sacrifices that she is talking about and see the fruition of it. It makes perfect sense. It makes more sense to put it there because if you put it where I had it, it's too far removed from the actual events.
Right.
And that is brilliant, sir. I seed to you. That is amazing. So we are saying new official order is episode 4, Rogue One, episode 5, mm-hmm. episode 6. No, back. I'm going to start from the beginning.
Start from the top.
Episode 4, Rogue One, episode 5, episodes 1, 2, and 3.
Yep.
Episode 6.
Yes.
Episode 7. Mm-hmm. Episode 8. And I
probably episode 9 when it comes out. Who knows? Yes. Maybe it might change something up. I highly doubt it.
Yes, but this is on official record, recorded, will be blasted out to the internet. Mike's list is the official list, and I am now making that my official list.
I feel honored, sir.
Mike gets the credit for it. I am giving him full credit. The Trekkie gets the credit for making a Star Wars list. Holy crap. So my brother who requested this, Joe, there's your list. I agree with it wholeheartedly. I think it does the story the best it can give it. That's just, wow, my mind is blown. I'm going to have to now go.
I've never seen a plot twist like this in a podcast before.
No, I'm going to have to go now. And normally I wait until the newest episode comes out to rewatch all the Star Wars movies.
Yeah.
And I watch them all the way through. Yes, I'm that type of person. I do the same thing with, I don't have all of the Marvel Cinematic Universe movies, but
I found the chronological Marvel Cinematic Universe. Actually, I kind of want to watch it in chronological.
I would love to edit it to where like you can take the pieces from like the piece at the beginning of the Thor movie and put it in. But anyway.
Yeah.
Point being, Point being, I will watch as many of those as I can before I go and watch the newest Avengers movie that will be coming out.
Yeah.
But I may have to go home this week since I don't have a rehearsal this week. I may have to go home and force my family to deal with this Star Wars thing, because that way of watching it, that opens up a whole new realm of enjoying it as a full work of art as opposed to just the individual pieces. That is amazing, man. You have blown my mind.
Thank you, sir.
And that's, especially coming from me when it comes to Star Wars stuff, that's saying a lot. But I will admit, that is amazing. Wow.
Thank you. Well, I would say this is a good spot to end the episode on.
I think so too. I'm almost speechless at this point.
Thank you, man.
So do your end of the episode thing.
We'll do. Crap. Folks, if you guys are listening, you guys enjoy it. If you have anything to say personally, what's your order that you would like to watch this stuff in, to be completely honest?
I mean, we'd like to hear your order, but if it's not the same order that Mike just came up with, it's wrong. But still, give it to us. We'd like to hear.
You can comment. Leave a comment on Facebook. Leave a comment on YouTube. If you're watching this on YouTube, leave a comment on our Twitter page. So Facebook and Twitter are at Zenchron, spelled X-E-N-C-H-R-O-N. You can listen to the podcast itself on the Zenial Chronicles.com.
Say it right, Mike. Say it right. You're just wallowing in this victory,
dude,
aren't you?
I'm shocked. But please listen at thezenialchronicles.com. We'll be sharing this on Facebook and on Twitter. Thank you guys so much. And
I only have one thing left to say.
Yeah,
and again, this is something that maybe only a few people will get. It's a phrase I use instead of using a foul word phrase. Buckleberry Fairy.
Right on. Hey, thank you guys so much for listening. We hope you enjoyed it. And hope to see you next week.
We're out.
Thank you for tuning in, friends. The journey continues next week.